I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to a Tuesday, May 24th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. We got a two-part show for you guys today here on the podcast. First up, Greg Brown, who is the radio play-by-play for the Pittsburgh Pirates. It was an absolute delight to be able to talk to Greg about his job, just kind of a dream job for so many kids growing up where they just practice being radio announcers. I was one of those people when I was in my cul-de-sac playing baseball in the neighborhood, just growing up. I grew up in a cul-de-sac and would call out at bats. And I remember pretending to be so many different players and memorizing lineups and going through it, and just it was such a fun thing. And it's just I'm doing the podcast now, but there are just so many kids out there that just it's like the dream job. So I've always been curious to see how folks who end up in that actual career and follow the Vin Scullys of the world do what they do. And Greg was super gracious with his time, and it was so much fun to talk to him about his role with the Pirates, his slogan, Raise the Jolly Roger, how he got into this profession, what his game day routine's like, who he likes talking to, who, I don't know, who's made a big impact over the years, how the chemistry works in the booth with a color play-by-play person, Ben Charrington's vision for the Pirates, Brian Reynolds' future in Pittsburgh, differences between Derek Shelton and Clint Hurdle, all that and more with Greg. So I greatly appreciate him making the time to come on the podcast. That it was a lot of fun, and I think you guys will enjoy our conversation. Don't forget, folks, you can also watch this very show if you would prefer to watch the podcast. Yeah, you can go ahead and check that out over on YouTube, youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast, and you'll find it there and all kinds of other videos and clips and stuff from our channel. You can read me at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com and type in your email and never miss any of my written content that way. Tweet at me at @Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. You can also email this very program at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. That's enough for me here, but let's go ahead and dive into my conversation with Greg. Hope you guys enjoy it. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am just delighted to have Mr. Greg Brown on this very podcast because it's just cool. I like radio play-by-play. Radio play-by-play, I think, outside of any other major sport, is the most soothing by far, Greg. Is it not? Is it the most soothing medium?
I mean, you know, Chase, growing up a baseball fan, and really a fan of broadcasting, you know, I spent days, you know, I'm old enough to have not been around when the internet came into being. So I'm kind of a prehistoric guy in that I listened to a transistor radio, you know, at night, high school days, grade school, listening to the play-by-play on the radio. So there is a romanticism about it. There's a, you know, you can use your imagination. I do both radio and TV, and both present challenges, but to your point about you know, the soothing aspect of broadcasting, there's definitely something to that. You know, growing up, I would kind of latch on to a team or two, and I would spend many summer nights listening to their voices, and there was some comfort almost being able to hear this familiar voice every day throughout a long summer. So, yeah, soothing, comforting, and very much enjoyable.
So is this what you always wanted to do?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much I learned out of high school. I wasn't good enough to actually be I thought someday I'd love to be a Major League Baseball player, play professionally. Found out quickly that I was not a good enough athlete to actually play other than, you know, high school ball. And just as the years went on after high school, after going to college, internships, and learning about broadcasting and getting to actually know the broadcasters, spending 10 years in the Pirates front office, that dream kind of built as the years went on. And when it became feasible to actually just be a broadcaster of any kind, let alone a major league broadcaster, I jumped at the opportunity.
Did you know that the Rays, the Jolly Roger, was going to be a thing for you? Did you know immediately that that was something that you were going to put together, and this was like, this is going to be my thing?
No, I when I started out broadcasting, I didn't have a call. Mm-hmm. A lot of announcers do, kind of their signature call. And when I started out, I was kind of like the number two announcer behind Lanny Fratteri, who I think was here like 30 years or so as the voice of the team. And one of my broadcast partners, a good friend of mine, Bob Walk, former player, was always on me to say, why don't you have a call? Lanny's got Lanny's calls. There was no doubt about it. Whether the Pirates won or lost a big game, when they won, whether it was a close game or a blowout, it was always, there was no doubt about it. Before that, Hall of Fame announcer for the Pirates named Bob Prince, he used to say when the Pirates won a ball game, we had them all the way. So, and then, you know, broadcasters throughout baseball history, I don't know how much other sports do. Well, actually, a friend of mine, one of my mentors, Mike Lang, who's a Hall of Fame announcer for the Pittsburgh Penguins for many years before he retired, would say when the Penguins won a game, as the clock was ticking down, he would say, Elvis has left the building. So everyone has a signature call. Anyway, Bob suggested, like, I told him, I've got a one-track mind. I can't concentrate on stuff like that. I've got to just worry about the game. He kept on me, and he said, what about, when the pirate ship captures another pirate ship or another ship, they hoist the colors. And I said, you know, when I was in the front office in the Pirates, I suggested that to the Pirate front office. I said, why don't you put one of those skull and crossbone flags high atop Three River Stadium when we win a ball game. Mm-hmm. And so people looking across, I don't know how much visuals you have on your show, so I apologize, yeah. Chase, but
cool.
So that, there we are, we're here at the ballpark. And so my suggestion was to go, you know, when people went downtown right there and to work, the next morning, before the internet, before scores were easily accessible, when you'd have to look, especially West Coast games, you'd have to look and listen to a radio station to hear whether the Pirates won or lost. The point being, when they went to work the next day, regardless of whether they listened to the game or not, look across that river, and you could see his gigantic flag hoisted atop Three River Stadium. And my boss, who was my boss's boss, he was the executive vice president, basically told me to, I think his direct quote I tell people was, because I was like 19 years old, he said, get out of my office, kid. We're not running a circus here. So I told Bob that story. I said, you know, that was many, many years ago. And he goes, well, you know, they call that skull and crossbone the Jolly Roger. Mm. How about hoist the Jolly Roger? Hoist was too formal for me. So we went with raise the Jolly Roger. And honestly, Chase, I was doing it for, I don't know how many years before we went on a playoff run in 2013 after many years of losing. We went on a good three-year stretch of winning. And that's when it got a ton of attention. There were articles written about it. There were stories, newspaper, all kinds of stuff. And it kind of caught fire then. And to this day, it's kind of neat. You know, when the Pirates win a ball game, we now have, they just erected it this year in center field. They've had this small little flagpole that almost, for whatever reason, without fanfare, they have raised it, hoisted it, but with much knowledge from the fan base. This year, they finally actually have a plaza out there, and they have a select a fan each night when the Pirates win, and they've got a captain's wheel, a helm, and the fan turns it and raises the jolly, which has been one of my thoughts for a long time, get the fans involved, make it huge. It's gotten a little bit bigger. It's not as big as I want, but hey, that's the long history of Raise the Jolly Roger.
Has there been a game where you have actually forgotten it at this point, where you went through the whole end of game, we won, and you're like, oh no, I didn't say it?
Yeah, I have. I've done that occasion when we've had a wild come from behind win, and again, I've got a one track mind, and my thought is not on that call. That it's way easier when you've got two outs and you're you know, the top of the ninth, and you know you're going to win the ball game, and you're thinking about it. But yeah, there have been a handful of times when I have forgotten about it, but you know, nothing I can do about it.
It's interesting too when you hear radio voices. So a friend of mine who does it in Atlanta, who's great too, Ben Ingram, who rose at the ranks, and he's just got the most radio baseball voice I've ever heard in my life. Just strong Mississippi baseball. Just the man was born to call baseball games. But I just wonder, for you, did you grow up and did people tell you, oh, Greg, that voice, like you got a voice for radio, like you just have a distinct kind of voice that would work on the radio?
No, they never said that, but I agree with you. I think he is, I really enjoy listening to him. Mm-hmm. I just think he does, and so many of them are good. They're unique voices throughout the game of baseball, but he has very distinct, as you say, Southern accent. I love this. I think he does a heck of a job. Mm-hmm. I will say, when people, this doesn't happen all the time, Chase, so don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to suggest anything here. But, you know, on occasion, I might be out and about at a grocery store or whatnot, and somebody, a lot of Pirates aren't very popular these days, so there are more than one occasion where I'll be checking out and someone will not know, and they might say, boy, you have a really good voice. Mm. You ever thought about being in radio? I am in radio. Or they'll say, they'll recognize the voice and say, oh my gosh, yeah. So, not growing. No one said that. Yeah, I personally don't feel like I've got one of those, as you mentioned, those distinct, very unique. But my buddy Mike Lang, that Penguin announcer, always suggested, he goes, you know, what you need to do, you need to smoke cigarettes or something. You need to get gravelly. Yeah. And he's got a very distinct voice in that regard. But no, not growing up, no one has said that. Had said, you know, we should be in radio with that voice.
I commend that. I give a strong hat tip to any hockey play-by-play man, because that is, I don't know how they do that. It's so fast, and line changes and names and pronunciations. You've got to be just on. Have you talked about that, where baseball, you can take your time, you can enunciate, you can slowly check things, you can, if it's a new player and you're like, okay, let me get, make sure I get this right, or there's a lot more time to prepare for calling a baseball game. But radio for hockey just seems like something that just is a fever dream to me.
Yeah. Oh, well, they're very, very different, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely talked to, in fact, a buddy of mine 20 years ago was in charge of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and one of their announcers had gotten sick and was going to be out for quite some time, and it was the wintertime, and he had asked me, he said, could you come over and do our games for a month? because Columbus is not very far from Pittsburgh. And mm-hmm. My wife and I, we just had our first child, and I was kind of like Mr. Mom. And but I actually thought about it and called Mike Lang and asked him about that. I said, you know, boy, it's so fast paced. I did a little hockey color in Buffalo when I was doing minor league baseball. I'd done, you know, play by play basketball, which is fast paced. But he goes, once you get the hang of it, the key for those hockey announcers is it's not easy. Is knowing those who's got the puck when. Mm-hmm. That's very difficult. In terms of baseball, it is many announcers have told me, and I believe this, it is probably the most challenging of all the sports to do because of that time you mentioned. It does allow you to try and, to a degree, figure out what you want to say, but you can't be constantly wondering what word I might say next. You've got to be on the ball, and it doesn't necessarily happen fluidly. The pace of the game changes. It happened yet to me yesterday, where we were just getting blown out. It was an awful game, and I had pulled out my. You have to have like information available. I went to some historical things back in the 1950s. The Pirates had a player who had hit home runs in 8 consecutive games, which to this day is a major league record. It was tied by Ken Griffey Jr. and Don Mattingly, and it started on this day and in Pirates history of this day in 1956. And I'm getting my notebook out. I'm getting, and just then there's a fly ball to right field. It'll finish up. Okay, I'll think about next inning. I'll pick that up because it's getting slow. And all of a sudden, the game starts boom, 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 boom. And my color announcer had some thoughts, and he started saying some things that he hadn't been before. And it changed entirely. But the pace of the game can really benefit you. It can be a curse at times because you do have to be ready for those slow moments, and you've got to figure out a way to fill that inconsistent gap. It's not a timeout. I sing, okay, 1 minute. We got 1 minute break, and then we'll go for 5 more minutes. No, it's every second can be action packed, and then you can slow down for a couple minutes. We had a pitcher yesterday got hurt, and in the very first inning, and in baseball, when a pitcher gets hurt, the new pitcher has all the time he needs to warm up. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you've got 8 to 10 minutes to talk, and so you've got to be prepared for that.
When it comes to breaking in or finding that chemistry and finding that comfortability with your color analyst, what is that like for you? Do you have a strategy? Have you had a strategy? Is that something that it just comes naturally? You just got to get the reps in and you figure it out as you go. Is there a lot more pre-planning? What is that relationship like when you're first getting started, calling a game? It's not just you. You have someone else in the cockpit with you. So how does that work?
My philosophy has been, and every play-by-play guy probably in every sport has a different philosophy. Mine is, I want people who listen or watch Pirates baseball, I want them to feel like they're sitting in a bar with their buddy, and we're there at the bar with them. And that means that I want the comfort level between me and my partner to be just like he and I are sitting in a bar. Having a beer. And so when you are, whatever you're doing, whether you yourself are listening to the game at a bar, at home, in the car, cutting your lawn, there's a comfort level there because it's supposed to be fun. And that's the main purpose of sport, entertainment. And so I want people to feel like they are enjoying themselves. It's relaxed. You mentioned that before. And the fortunate thing for me over 29 years has been I'm not only watching a game I love and doing a job I love, but I'm sitting next to one of my best friends. All the guys that have been my partners, the recently retired Steve Blass, a former pitcher, is probably my very best friend on the earth. And I prepared a game way differently with him than I do Bob Walk. Steve Blass liked to... He was a guy that almost, he would go into the media guide. He'd grab a media guide and he'd he'd go through. I saw him. I would see him prepare a scorecard like I do. So he'd go through the media guide. He'd go look at statistics and look at a guy's bio and you know what he weighs and what his record was last year. Well, so that meant that I didn't have to do that part of the preparation game, not to be repetitive. So I knew that he was kind of more of a numbers guy. I backed off on the numbers. Bob Walk is a guy who just is free and easy and kind of like whatever happens on the field, I'll talk about. He comes out of nowhere with stuff. He's like, have you ever listened to Bill Walton? But
yeah,
he's like a baseball's version of Bill Walton. Very similar to their thought process. So that's kind of it. And now we're bringing in kind of new color announcers, three new ones the last couple of years, a former reliever for the Pirates, Matt Capps, a former utility second baseman for the Pirates, a Pittsburgh guy, Neil Walker, very popular, Kevin Young, former Pirate first baseman, a power hitter. And for a time, we had Michael McHenry, a former Pirate catcher, who's doing pre- and post-game shows for us now. But each one of those guys has they're different backgrounds, all three of them. And I try to understand what it is that will make them succeed and will make them want to contribute along the way more. If I ask him a question, will it lead to something else? I know if, with the Pittsburgh guy, Neil Walker, I can reference Pittsburgh sports with him. I can talk about the Penguin game the night before. Like, he's a big Penguin fan. I know that. Can you believe that? Or someone's in the stands, a former Steeler player, and I can talk to him about that. I talked about his days as a Pirate in the glory years, 13, 14, and 15. He was a part of those teams. The other guy's different. Kevin Young played back. I knew him in the minor leagues. He and I were in the minor leagues together when he was coming up to the Pirates organization. So I've known him forever. And I know about first base. He's a great defensive first baseman. And I'll try and maybe steer a conversation for that. He also has been in our minor league system working with players offensively, how to get better offensively, and steer the conversation that way. So it's just, it's not, you know, not brain surgery, it's nothing scientific about it. It's just, for me, what makes the most enjoyable broadcast, at least when I was growing up, it was what, wow, those guys like really seem to get along. I can't wait to, you know, this game, you know, they might say something funny. They might argue. I have people, I've known Bob Walk for so long. He and I have done these games for forever. He and I chuckle at, you know, especially in the wintertime. He lives in the about 20 minutes north of Pittsburgh. I'm about an hour north of Pittsburgh now, so we don't see each other much in the off season. But we both will compare notes that sure as shooting, invariably a handful of times during the course of the off season, people will come up to us at a store or somewhere publicly, and they'll say, "Why do you dislike Greg Brown? Or why do you dislike Bob Walker? Why do you guys?" And I'll say, "Well, what do you mean dislike?" And they said, "Well, you guys don't seem like you seem like you argue a lot." I said, "That's the whole point." Where he's like my brother. I argue with my brother. So anyway, that's it. Kind of a long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's interesting. Do you have a game day routine? Do you have something that you have to do every day? Are you kind of a creature of habit? Do you, when you take your hour drive into PNC, do you have like a whole routine that you go through to get you ready to call a game?
I'm doing that right now, as a matter of fact. Especially the first game of every series is like, I don't know that we played the Rockies much last year. I don't know if we played them at all. Kind of thinking about it. I got to go back and look at the schedule because it was a wacky schedule. We were not on the road much of last year. We played them, but we didn't go to Colorado, the announcers, as I recall. So the last time we did play them was early last year. And anyway, I'm going back and looking at notes. I'm preparing my scorecard. I've just gotten the lineups. I'm putting the statistics down there. And now I'll go through each player in the lineup for the Colorado Rockies, and get some background information on it. I don't have a very good memory. I've got, as I said, Chase, I got a one-track mind, so I've got probably the biggest scorebook in baseball, and I'm proud of that fact.
Oh, there you go.
It's very large. I think Pat Hughes of the Chicago Cubs might be a close second, but it's because I need to write everything down. and goes back to the question about, or the point about baseball being very, so leisurely and and not a clock. You don't know, and you're better off being prepared in case you have more of those moments where you need to fill something. And I like to try and fill something that is interesting rather than just talk to talk. And so I'll look for different nuggets of each player. I'll try and do a crash course on where the Rockies are this year, where they were last year, run through their story so I can present that. It's especially important the first game of each series, because on the second game tomorrow night, I can refer back to tonight. And game three of the series, I can refer back to the first two games of the series. Each baseball season is filled with series of games against other teams. So it helps to have a reference point going back to last night or earlier this year when the Pirates played the Cardinals. The Pirates won 2 of 3. And, you know, Key Brian Hayes had a key three-run homer. Here's Hayes now to the plate against that same pitcher. Well, you don't have that now with the Rockies. It's brand new. And so I'll go back and talk about last year's Rockies team, where they are, the trades they made, the acquisitions. And then I'll go and hear the manager coming up in about a half an hour. And I might have a couple questions for him. I might do a pregame interview with a player. I do have that routine.
I like that. I like that. Is there one player in particular that you love talking with the most on this year's Pirates team?
On this year's team, I liked Roberto Perez. He got hurt a couple weeks ago, and he was fascinating to me. I really enjoyed talking to him. I like Diego Castillo. He's a great baseball fan. I told our rookie who came up just a couple weeks ago through our translator that I appreciated the fact that I asked him a handful of questions about his debut last year. He had made his major league debut last year, and I had some other things for him. And I could tell, even though I don't know Spanish, I know a word or two. That's why we have the translator there. But I could tell he was very thoughtful with his answers and wasn't giving me anything pat, you know. So I thanked him sincerely for that. I really appreciate you not just – you could tell he was thinking. And so those are the players that I like that just don't give you those pat answers but actually do. Keith Brian Hayes, our third baseman, is kind of like that. He really does consider the question and give – not necessarily long answers, but thoughtful ones, not giving you what you think you want to hear, but just what truly is entering his mind and what his thought process is.
Who all time has been your favorite?
All time favorite Pirate to interview? Well, that's a really good question. Man, you know, I don't know that I could pick one guy. A lot of pitchers, because they have the most time between starts, the starting pitchers seem to have been the ones that are the most interesting, I'd say. So,
why do you think that is?
I will say it too. A guy that became a really good friend of mine who I knew in the minor leagues was Al Martin, an outfielder for the Pirates, and he was my favorite guy to talk. I would talk to him every single day, not necessarily on tape or recording, just going in there and being able to talk to him about anything about the team. He'd tell me everything about the players, and he was almost like an assistant coach. It's a young team, and he was he really was an interesting guy. So anyway, yeah,
that's interesting. What has been your biggest early surprise about this Pittsburgh team? Because I mean, the Reds have obviously just been really, really bad in the NL Central, and Brewers with their pitching and the way they've hit thus far, they're, I think, 12 games over 500 as we're recording this. But you're right there with the Cubs. You're in the middle of the road. You're this season another rebuilding type year, but it has been relatively okay. And Greg, that's the way I'm looking at it right now with the Pirates. Is that a fair way of characterizing their start? And then also, who surprised you? Has there been one player? Has there been one stretch of games? What's caught your eye?
Yeah, right now we're in a very bad stretch, so it's nice of you to say that. You know, they're in a bad funk, unfortunately, that's the great thing about the game of baseball. The longer a season goes on, the more it exposes, you know, your warts. And
Tied in third in the NL Central, man. Tied in third.
Yeah, well, that's, again, that's a positive way of saying it. Mm-hmm. Even at 16-24, but mm-hmm. but you know, the thing that gives us hope is, you know, they called up a pitcher today mm-hmm. who spent a brief time very early this year in the bullpen, made I think one long relief outing, and he's a guy that they got in a trade with the New York Yankees before last year. And he's been the guy that everyone talks about as being a true, legitimate star of the future, pitching mm-hmm. ace. And he came up today, and he's probably going to start tomorrow. And that's what gives us hope. Okay, this guy, it's just going to be fun to watch this build. And so that's what is encouraging, more than the record, because they're not going to, you know, they're not going to win anything this year. That's the brutal truth of it all, that the Pirates aren't going anywhere, that your Cubs aren't going anywhere. I hate to tell you, Chase.
No, I'm a Braves fan. This is the Tennessee Smokies. That's a Tennessee Smokies. Yeah, I'm in East Tennessee.
Okay. No, so you're a Braves fan?
Hold on, I got you. Hold on. There we go. So you got the 2021 banner right over there. So.
Oh, okay. All right. You're a front runner then. You should have said that.
I'm from Atlanta. I am.
You've always rooted for the Braves your whole life.
Yes.
Okay. Now Atlanta is like 3 or 4 games under 500.
Yes.
Not doing well at all.
Well, I mean, they just won the series with the Fish, but I mean, you lose.
You're not going to jump off that bandwagon, though.
No, you can't. I'm still. I'm Atlanta forever. Okay. I got the Falcons thing right here. I got the Doc Rivers, Atlanta Hawks.
Nice.
Right here.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's good, because my argument with many people in town, sometimes they'll say, "Oh, I'm a big Pirate fan," or "I can't stand the Steelers." Or I said the other day at my barber, I was sitting there talking to some people, and some guy walked in, said, "I'm a Penguin fan."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a Pirate fan. I said, I don't understand that. I don't understand how you can be one, pick and choose your fandom. It doesn't. And I know what it is. It is. I was kidding you. But a lot of people, they have liked the Penguins only because the Penguins win. Mm-hmm. They don't like the Pirates only because the Pirates aren't winning right now. And and that's not what a fan is. A fan roots for the team come heck or high water. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that when I grew up, I was grew up in central Pennsylvania, a Chicago Bears fanatic. I loved the Chicago Bears. I still like them. I still want to go to Chicago every once in a while. In fact, their new defensive coordinator is a Pittsburgh native, and he happened to be at the Pirate Cub game about a month ago when we were at Wrigley Field, and came up and talked to him, and it was so cool. I said, I grew up a Bears fan. He goes, what? How in the world did that happen? That's a story in itself. But anyway, the point is, I tell people that when I grew up rooting for the Chicago Bears, they were horrible. They were one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in football every single year. I mean, they didn't sniff the playoffs. They were, you know, if they finished 500, it was a victory in my mind. But, man, I could not wait every week to maybe tune in the WBBM in Chicago. If they were playing a 4 o'clock game, that meant that the sun would set and many other stations would have to go off the air back then. Again, this is the radio days. And so 4 o'clock game meant that, boy, around in the wintertime, around 5 o'clock, I could tune into WBBM and hear the crackling voice. I think it was Joe McConnell was the play-by-play voice of the Chicago Bears. And Walter Payton was their running back. And, oh, my gosh. But the thing is, I wanted them to win. I was distraught when they lost, and they would lose a lot. But it didn't mean that after all these years, I'd go like, you know what? I'm so tired of them losing, I quit. I'm not going to be a fan of theirs anymore. That's not what a fan
Can
is.
Can I offer a theory on this?
Yeah.
I think baseball is unique in this regard because there are so many regular season games that if you are a fan and you're a diehard for a team that is in the gutter for a while, that's 300 plus you're looking at. And it's hard to sit through a lot of losing in baseball, more so than it is in the NFL. You can sit through a season or two. That's 30 games. That's not a significant part of your life. But if you're sitting through a lot of these painful rebuilds, you're like Baltimore Orioles fans, what they've had to go through for the last 5 years, I just think it naturally generates apathy when you have to sit through that many losing games. You just become numb to it. And I don't know. I think baseball is unique in that regard. That's my theory.
That's a good theory. The only thing I'll say is that I'm living proof that I'm like that. I've lived through some AP or UPI story somebody showed me about 2 or 3 years ago. They did a story on the losingest announcer in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you're like what, 40%? 40%
number one. Number one.
What is your percentage? Isn't it something like 40-something percent? You are
I don't know. I've certainly not done the work to figure that out, but someone else has. But
yeah,
the thing is, like, when I go to the ballpark, I still want the team to win.
Right.
And my hope is that they do win. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it does not, after all these years, I've not lost any interest whatsoever. Mm-hmm. In the team. Now, I understand I'm being paid by the team also. So perhaps if I weren't being paid, although I still see loyal Pirate fans who pay for season tickets here every year. Mm-hmm. They don't give up. And the thing about that, Chase, that theory is you're probably spot on. Think about it. When you win, when you stick to it, when you're not a bandwagon jumper, on and off, oh, they start to win, oh, I'm in a band. When you have been through the tough times, it feels so much better,
yeah,
better than anything in the world when they win, because you could be prouder than anyone else that, you know, I stuck by them. I knew the tough times, and to make it, and I think it's oftentimes baseball is a reflection on life too. I've said that too. Mm-hmm. It's unlike any other sport because of the grind. You mentioned it's 162 games a year, not including 30 spring training games, sometimes 35 to 40, reporting to spring training. I mean, it's the early February all the way through into late September, early October, if you make it to the postseason, into November. So it is unlike any other grind. And you can't hide in baseball. You can't cherry pick in baseball. When you make it to the major leagues in baseball, you are going to be either on that pitcher's mound or at home plate, and you are going to have to face the music if you're a starting pitcher every 5 days, if you're a regular player every single day. And when you start out, you know, a rookie, and wow, this guy's really, really good, and here we go, and he gets a couple of hits. We just had a Cardinal guy come through here who looked really good. Three games. Wow, like Cardinal Nation's got to be on fire about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're going to start to adjust. And sure as shooting, this is what baseball does to you, because it's every day. It's good. There's going to come a time when you're going to have some valleys along with peaks. And now what do you do with this valley? How do you get your way? How do you work your way out of it? Because now all of a sudden, oh, shoot, I went 0 for 4, had some bad luck. Back in the lineup the next day, 0 for 4. Now I'm striking out 2 or 3 more times. And now I'm starting to wonder, shoot, am I doing something wrong? And now you start to grip that back tighter. And now you start to really concentrate. And now you start to get out of your element. And now you're over, all of a sudden you're out of the starting lineup because you're slumping. And then your opportunities are fewer and fewer. And when you do get that opportunity, now you got to try and deliver now this game, because I'll be on the bench again. And pretty soon I'm in the minor leagues again. And the guys that stick to it and can be really good for a long, long time, man, that's greatness. And that's what I watch every day, this incredible grind that these guys go through. I root for them. I get to know them as a fan. I felt like I got to know the Chicago Bears. And as a broadcaster, I certainly get to know these guys. And fans feel like they know, maybe through the broadcasters, they know the personalities. They know some of these guys. And they root for them for that reason. I get your theory. I hear it. I just will never understand. I'll never understand quitting on my team, no matter how bad it gets.
That's fair. It's interesting that Cervelli, who obviously a longtime Pirate catcher, and now he's the catching coach in San Diego, and he's been great by all accounts early on. Is that like one of those where I am curious, when you're around the ballpark and you're around these guys a lot, are the, do you just pick up and you're like, oh, that guy's a future manager, oh, that guy's gonna be a great coach, that guy's built for this? There's just something you see that other people in the day-to-day where you just see it. Is that similar to Kutch? Like, what do you think McCutchen does after he retires? Is he some?
I don't know. I could see maybe McCutchen maybe getting into coaching, but that's a really good question about McCutchen. I hadn't thought about him. Usually, there are so many former catchers are managers. You could probably on one hand count the number of non-catchers. Actually, Buddy Black, who's the manager of the Colorado Rockies, is a former pitcher. That's really rare.
Yeah.
Those guys just don't. I don't know why that is. Well, it's probably because the catchers are in the game all the time, and they see the entire field like nobody else. So they're working with the pitcher, but they're also looking at the infield and the outfield, and they've got to be into every single pitch, every single play. I suppose utility players also make, I think, good managers, like Craig Counsell is a former utility player for the Milwaukee Brewers. He bounced around a number of positions. So I think that helps to kind of have that knowledge. And, I think I always think that catchers, almost any catcher, has a chance to be a big league manager. Heck, we just had Jason Kendall came through here last week, and a former Pirate catcher who's doing a little work in our minor leagues. I know he wants to manage bad in the big leagues. He really wants to manage. So, yeah, it's interesting to manage that. Catchers just seem to have the interest and maybe the know-how to make it as managers, either in professional baseball or in the big leagues.
Can you go ahead and expedite the Brian Reynolds to Atlanta Braves trade this summer? Can you go ahead and...
That will not happen. It's funny because this winter I was on a radio show with some San Francisco guys, and they said the same thing about the John. Hey, we want Brian Reynolds back. Can we make that happen? He is. It's funny because he's just now seemingly getting out of the season-long slump. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait till he catches fire. But I don't think he's going anywhere. He's signed up for at least two more years. We'll see what happens. I think the Pirates believe, our general manager says it all the time, in order to win, you're going to have a lot of good players. Well, he's one of them. Ryan Hayes is another. And they need more and more of those good players to win games. So I just can't see. The Braves would have to give so much up. I don't think you'd like the trade.
No?
I don't think you'd like it. You'd have to give up so much.
Oh, we need something in the outfield. There's only so many Travis DeMeritt games that I can take at this point. two final questions for you. So you mentioned the GM. So Ben Charrington, who took over pretty recently. But when you've talked to him, what's his vision? Have you gotten a sense of the timeline and the expectations that, and you incorporate that into the broadcast of like, here's where we're going and here's the plan?
Well, his vision is just that, is to develop, deploy. I think he says deploy, develop. I don't know if it's determine is one, but you know, determine which players are good for your organization, get them in, work with them through the minor league system, get them up there and develop them and make them good citizens, good players, and that's how you'll win. And so he started a rebuild from day one, and he's gotten – rid of just about every player that was here previously and brought in all kinds of talent. I think they went from, I want to say 18th his first year in terms of minor league talent, might have been 20 something, but now they're third according to Baseball America. So in a short amount of time, he's done that first big step. He's still doing more of it, still getting more and more talent in the farm system. We'll see if they are able to develop these players and get them good and get them in the big leagues and keep them in the big leagues and make them really good Major League Baseball players.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, Greg. So the biggest difference between Clint Hurdle and Derek Shelton is what?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the in terms, because the most important thing is what they do on the baseball field. I got along fine with Clint, but Clint was very, very reserved. I mean, he, Clint got into some bad moods, boy, and you felt the wrath. Mm-hmm. Shelton, I know, is in bad mood right now, but he's just different. He's mm-hmm. We have a connection. I connect with Shelton. I understand that I can't suggest that Hurdle didn't do great things here. I mean, he mm-hmm. brought the team 13, 14, and 15. He's what the team needed. He's a great speaker. I've never seen anybody as good with children who are struggling with some type of a handicap or whatnot. He has a daughter who has Prader-Willi, and I've never seen anyone connect with kids like he does. He's and he can hold an audience like you cannot believe. He's an unbelievable speaker, and he was good for the team. He brought, as he used to call it, street cred when he came in. He had street cred when he came in. He had a resume with the Colorado mm-hmm. Rockies. Shelton just is just different, and we'll see if he wins, because ultimately that's what matters. Can he win? Well, he doesn't have the players yet. When he gets the players, we'll see if he wins, and then he'll be a great manager.
Is he a last name guy? Did you just start calling him Shelton altogether, or is he like, it's not Derek, it's Shelton?
Shelty. He loves the nickname Shelty. Yeah, oh. So everybody calls him Shelty. Yeah.
Interesting.
Shelty. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So,
all right.
Yeah.
There you go. Greg, how do the good folks check out your work, the radio broadcast, and keep up with you this season?
Chase, thanks a million for having me on. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Just go to listen to the games, MLB.com, and I've got a Twitter I run occasionally, G Brownie Points. G Brownie Points.
Mm-hmm. I like
that's
it.
That's it.
There you go. Greg, good luck today and the rest of the way. This was a delight. I greatly appreciate you making the time.
Thanks, Chase.
All right, that'll do it for part one here on the Tuesday, May 24th, 2022 edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to Greg for coming on part one here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. It was great talking with him, and I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation. Make sure you keep up with Greg on his Twitter page and everything else he's got going with the radio show. And hey, I'm like, even if you're not a Pirates fan, just listen to baseball on the radio. It is an absolute delight, and check in on the Pirates. Don't forget, folks, if you enjoyed our conversation, make sure you tell a friend, family member, or a coworker about the show and why you like it and why you think they would like the Chase Thomas Podcast as well. You can also help the show continue to grow by leaving this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if that is how you are listening to today's program. You can also email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. And tweet at me at @Chase_Thomas and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Part two coming up with Lindsay OK and Evan Swords to talk all things NFL coming up in just 1 second on this feed. So go check that out as well. The episode's coming tomorrow after that, but let's get on with part two. Over there, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.